You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network. Monday morning, welcome. All Marine Radio in session. I should gavel this thing to session. I need a gavel. You know, I do need a gavel. I used to have a gavel. I don't know what the hell happened to it. I did. On my when I did my over the air radio show, I had a gavel for some reason. Because I was in charge, right? When I needed to use the gavel, I used the gavel. Trust me, yeah, because sometimes you need to. The good Monday morning to you. 21st day of October. 9 more days, we're in November. Straight up winter, man. Straight up winter. The whole bunch of stuff to talk about today. We're going to talk about Siri a little bit here. You're going to hear Jack Keane in a few minutes. There's a story that I want to get to here in a few minutes, and it's about my house, I think. I did more accounting over the weekend. I thought I found a $3,000 mistake. I was so fired up because there's like, you take in money from, you know, when you start running a service business, you know, people say, well, can I pay with a credit card? And you're like, well, shit, how do you do that? So I called the bank. Well, you have to set this thing up and blah, blah. So I do all that, right? Cause it's easy. And, so I'm looking at my credit card statement. I'm reconciling it because I'm an accountant now. And I'm looking, well, where is that charge? It doesn't hit my account. Right? It's here in this statement, but it's not here. Like, what happened to it? So I look and I can't find it. And I think, you know, maybe it's like a data error, a batch error, right? Where you download stuff and, you know, and somehow or other, like an old fax transmission that, you know, something interrupts the data and then the company doesn't catch it. So anyway. And so I was like hopeful that I had found money. They didn't complete a transaction. What the hell happened? So anyhow, I found it, But what's odd though, it wasn't the amount that I billed. It was a different amount. So they somehow deducted something from it. I don't know what that is, but I'm going to find out. And then while I'm doing my accounting, thankfully that I'm doing this now, I found out that, you know, the ergonomic chair that I bought, I got charged twice for that. And then I thought, you know, how many times has that happened? People don't even notice it in their accounts if they don't scrutinize them. And I don't know that many people that scrutinize their, you know, finances on a monthly basis. I don't, or I didn't. I do now. So, and then I found somebody didn't pay me for traveling. Yeah, to the tune of maybe, you know, $400. Yeah, so that made me happy. So anyway, so I'm still not done with my accounting. I'm getting there though. I'm getting close to the end. But anyway, when I was working over the weekend, I saw a story late on Friday, and we talked about it before, and you know, things that happen, you know, in places, you know, where you fight, and you don't really think of them before you leave. And things that surprise people, right? Number one, I was talking about this yesterday, but one of the things that surprised people, you know, and you'll get asked different questions like, well, what was the scariest part? And when you say saying goodbye to your kids and your wife and not knowing if you're going to see them again, and they look at you like, what? Like, yeah, it's, you know, I ask my friends what that's like. And guys who are tough guys, you know. Imagine what goes through your head when you hug your kid and you don't know if you're going to see him again. And so other surprising, you know, so things that surprise you. And I mean, I think that the first time that happens to you, it surprises you how difficult that night is, when you say goodbye. And then I remember in 2004, I want to say that's the first time there was a Marine ID went off and the shrapnel ripped off his lower jaw. And I remember reading about it and I remember asking about it because I had friends that were involved in it. And yeah, they're like, what happened? Yeah, what happens to that guy now? You know, what do they do? You know, your lower jaw. Right? Was his tongue okay? Like, you know, it's like things you never ever think about. You know, like, I think most people, you know, consider, you know, you might get killed, but, you know, not too many people think, you know, you don't know about stuff like that, right? So you, all of a sudden, one day, you're like, I don't want that to happen to me. I'd rather be dead, I think. You know, you can't kiss anybody. You can't kiss your kids. You'll never kiss a woman again. I mean, what happens? You know, and you're going to roll around looking like a monster, you know, right? You know, it's like, and, you know, and you, and again, you've never considered it. And then you're like, wow, yeah, I don't want that to happen to me. And then, I remember when we had a Marine who had his, you know, genitals blown off in Afghanistan. And, you know, I remember hearing the story from their battalion commander, and I don't know what he was doing. He'd come where I was for a meeting. We were talking, and you know, just how are things going? He goes, yesterday was brutal. And he told a story of a Marine being wounded, and then, you know, so an IED, right? You can step on them, right, and function them. The other thing that they did with IEDs, they created what they called, you know, a directional IED. So that means the pressure plate is in the area that you're going to walk. The IED itself is buried in front of you, and they can angle the way it explodes by the way they dig it in the ground, right? And if they put some metal around it, they can shape it so that it comes out. It comes out of that metal box, you know, that's open on one side. So it the majority of the energy goes in that direction, you know, and metal and all the rest of the stuff. So it's a directional IED. So, and then depending on how far that is away from you, right? If it's far, it will spray into your pelvis. If it's close to you, it stays in your lower extremities, right? So that's really the range. And you know, we would lose guys who would bleed to death because it would be either angled higher or further away, and a lot of the shrapnel would go into their abdomen. And, you know, then there was a race between the vascular surgeon, organ failure, blood transfusions, and trying to tie, you know, veins and arteries and things like that. And so, but anyway, so that's how that's what creates this stuff, right? So, you know, the Marine had his genital blown off. And you're thinking about that. And he's, you know, 19, 20 years old. And so when I saw this story, I don't know, probably maybe a year ago, that there had been a penis transplant performed on a veteran at Johns Hopkins. And I mean, I saw that and I was like, it just stopped me. Like, oh my God, are you kidding me? Right? And I remember reading the story. He talked about, you know, how good it felt to be able to stand up and go to the bathroom. I mean, again, things you don't think of. You know, things you don't think of. And you're going to live like that for the rest of your life. You know? And so, anyway, there's a little piece that, I don't know who did this, if John Hopkins did it, if military.com did it, but I just want to play a little video piece that talks about the surgery. I do want to play this, and for some reason... it just shows the surgery. The procedure was performed on a U.S. military veteran whose genitals were blown off by an IED blast. The complicated surgery took 14 hours and required a team of doctors and surgeons. And then in the schematic they're showing you is that they took off the full front of his pelvis, right? So they didn't replace, like, the penis. They took off the whole pelvis. And then they reattached the veins and the arteries. And then the nerves, right? And so the nerves, and then as Bob Nielsen introduced me to guys who had arm transplants. I can't remember what trip it was of mine to D.C., but I met him at Walter Reed, and he took me around and introduced me to all the people that he knows. Yeah, Bob and his pizza. And so he took me around, and, you know, there were two guys in Walter Reed that day, and they were doing physical therapy for arm transplants. And so I sat down, we were talking. I said, what about, can you feel anything? And he said, well, the nerves regenerate at about an inch a month. So when I started, I couldn't feel, you know, when I started 3 months ago, I couldn't feel, right? And the transplant takes place at about mid-bicep, right, for both these guys, I think. And, you know, so it started here, I could feel too. And then now I'm like below the elbow. And, you know, the doctors hope if everything goes right, then that will gradually, the nerves, you know, will regenerate. And you know, maybe in about, you know, a year, I'll have full feeling back in my arm. And you're just sitting there going, wow. Wow. So Bob took me down there. So it shows all the things it did, you know, so they reattached the urethra, right, and that the nerves then begin to grow. Doctor said the patient had a good chance of being fully functional after recovery. Is that amazing stuff? It's awesome. And so I guess the thought is, like, trying to connect it down there close to where your penis joins your body would is too hard and too many things can go wrong. But if you back it up and you connect it further into the body, then everything else that direction, you know, is already functioning, and then you can go ahead and do that. And then it's easier to attach things further into the body. It's amazing though, right? I mean, just to think of what they do. So the story, it's been a little over a year and a half since Ray underwent the most important medical procedure of his life, a one-of-a-kind surgery he hoped would remedy catastrophic injuries he sustained 8 years ago. The former Navy corpsman, he wished to remain anonymous, was on patrol in Afghanistan in 2010 when his team encountered a Taliban ambush, immediately inflicted heavy casualties. He went into action, scrambling toward a wounded Marine through a barrage of fire. Then a flash. He was hurtling through the air. I remember everything froze and I was upside down. I remember thinking, this isn't good. And I was on my back. The blast from the roadside bomb, triggered by Ray's boot, would have undoubtedly killed personnel in conflicts when flimsy or non-existent protective equipment did little to enhance survivability. Ray's gear kept him alive barely. Both of his legs were severed above the knee, injuries he would eventually learn to cope with through the use of prosthetics. But Ray would leave much more than his legs behind in the dirt of Afghanistan. The explosion ripped apart his midsection, severing his penis, scrotum, and a section of his abdominal wall. In time, the relief of having survived the catastrophic maiming dissolved into despair, with thoughts of living with such extensive disabilities prompting suicidal ideations. Quote, there were times you'd be hanging out with guys who would be talking about getting hurt, and that one of the first things when they get blown up is you check down there. And they would say things like, if I lost mine, I'd just kill myself, he told the New York Times in an interview last year. When I would actually think about killing myself, I would think, am I really just going to kill myself over my penis? Here's a doctor, Lieutenant Colonel Timothy Tausch. As soon as they wake up, they're not asking about where their legs are, he told an MIT interviewer. They're asking about the testicles and their penis. You can't put a number on how significantly this affects one of those wounded warriors' lives. After a recommendation of his urologist at Walter Reed, he entered into discussion with medical professionals to explore what options existed for someone with his affliction. At that time, Ray met Richard Reddit, a plastic surgeon at Johns Hopkins in Baltimore who specializes in genital reconstruction. Reddit was quick to recommend Ray undergo a phalloplasty, a procedure that, according to the MIT Technology Review, involves a rolled tube of tissue, blood vessels, and nerves taken from the forearm or thigh and transplanted into the groin. And which needs a pump to get erect. But Reddit soon had a change of heart, and the surgeon opted instead to list Ray as a candidate for a full penis and scrotum transplant, the first ever full penis and scrotum transplant performed on a military veteran. This was actually something that could fix me, Ray told MIT. I could go back to being normal again. He got a call in to go to the hospital in March of 2018. A recent deceased match had been found. An improbability that required a donor of similar age, color, and size. It's amazing. Anyway, I'll put a link to the story in the post for this hour, and you can check it out. It's a pretty long article. The operation, which was estimated to cost between $300,000 and $400,000, was funded by Johns Hopkins, with each of the surgeons performing the procedure for free. 2 days would go by. The report said until Ray could see the surgical results. Quote, in the back of your mind, you know this is a transplant, and you wonder if it's going to be too much for you to handle, he told MIT. Once I went through the surgery, all of those concerns just went away. It was one of the best decisions I ever made. His quality of life has improved dramatically since the procedure, the report said, with Ray placing a renewed emphasis on physical fitness and a blossoming social life. Functionally speaking, Ray can now urinate standing up. And while he'll remain unable to father children due to the deconstruction of his own reproductive tissue, male enhancement medications like testosterone and Kalay have made it possible for him to achieve erectile function. He told me that was the best news I could hear, that it feels normal, Reddit told MIT. According to the report, 1,367 American service members have suffered genital injuries during the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Over 500 of those have been determined to be so severe that their only remedy may be the same procedure performed on Ray, of which only 4 total have ever been done. How about that for awesome? No, just a great story, right? Just a great story. I would be remiss, yeah, if I did not. Give me a second here. The Yankees got beat by the Astros in an awesome game. As crushing as it was, I mean, it didn't bother me. Right, it didn't bother me because it was just such a great game, right? And you know, I grew up, you know, my dad used to, you know, talk about, hey, you play, you know, 7 innings to give your shot to win in the 8th to 9th inning, and if you get that shot and you don't do it, you know, then so be it. You know, you got beat, you can live with that. He said, what really takes it out of you is when, you know, you don't even give yourself a shot, right? Or you screw it up. And he said, you know, I mean, you know, some, you know, sports, man, sometimes you get beat. And so, I'm going to play some audio for you here. The audio that you're going to hear is, you're going to hear in the top of the inning, the Yankees are down by 2 runs. Guy named DJ LeMahieu hits a 2-run home run. Obviously, it's in Houston, so the place goes silent. But you know what? There's, you know, I love that kind of stuff, right? And to me, I, you know, not everybody loves baseball. I do. I grew up with it. But especially in the playoffs, baseball, what's beautiful about it is the It's pace, right? This frame by frame agony of baseball is to me wonderful. And so you're going to hear the Yankees tie the game up in the top of the ninth. And then in the bottom of the ninth, Houston has, I mean, they're arguably the best team in baseball. They're a better team offensively than Washington is. But both Washington and Houston have pitching staff, starting pitching in particular, that are like Koufax and Drysdale. If you love, you know, Titanic clashes, then that's what you're going to see in the World Series, which is pretty cool. So, but Houston's got a better team. One of the guys who's been just a great player for them is their shortstop. He's about 5'6", maybe. And he hits a 2-run home run in the bottom of the ninth inning, and the place goes hysterical. So you're going to hear both those calls, if you will, and then you're going to hear a couple of interviews that are really cool right after it, who say some interesting things. So, normally this would be painful to me, but it's not. Houston's got a good baseball team, and sometimes you lose.
That's high in a full count.
Okay, so this is DJ LeMahieu facing Houston's closer. I can't remember his first name. His last name is Osuna. So bottom of the ninth, 1 runner on. Yankees losing 4-2.
Got to be real confident if you're going to go up there that you can make a 3-2 pitch, because the chance of success for getting a strike, a But the top part of the zone for Mayhew is not great. You have to have in your mind that you know you're going to throw the 3-2 pitch if you miss with the 2-2. Mayhew added as a free agent. Yankees front office didn't know exactly where he would play. He can play all over. He's been anchored at first base, and all he's done in a Yankee uniform is hit. 3-2 pitch. Fly ball into right. Back at the wall. This ball is gone for a home run. And this game is tied.
I was
ninth inning, game 6-0 for the Yankees. It's 4-4.
Okay, and at that time my phone blows up. What the? Are you kidding me? Right? It was awesome. It was awesome. Game's tied though, right?
And right field it is. Didn't lock the 2-2 pitch. Had to come in there on the 3-2 pitch. And LeMahieu just outside of the glove of Springer. Wow. Golly.
Golly. Who said that, right? Like, what is like? Is that like Leave It to Beaver stuff? Golly.
Now the 3-2 from Osuna. Swung on.
Okay, now this is John Sterling, the voice of the Yankees. Right? John Sterling's like 82 years old. Right? Now, he doesn't think it's a home run because when he thinks it's a home run, he says this thing. It is far. It is long. It is gone. He doesn't say that. So here's the Yankees radio network call.
I fly to right. Back goes Springer on the stands. He leaps, and it's gone. It's a two-run game-tying home run for DJ LeMahieu. A fly ball to right just over the leap of Springer into the right field seats. What a dramatic two-run home run in the what could have been the final game of the series. David John makes long gone. He hits a two-run home run to tie the game at 4. And this place has become a library.
Well, let me tell you something. It's not going to become a library for very long, John, because pandemonium is going to bust out in that son of a bitch. So here's Jose Altuve's at-bat.
Rusnik is on deck, so you still have a base open if you're Chapman and Sanchez. You can't forget about it. Cannot let this guy with the 2-0 count beat you. Altuve takes a strike on a slider.
Yeah, Aroldis Chapman throws like 100 miles an hour. He throws him a slider, right? A good slider, makes the count 2-1, and then he tries to do it again. And Jose Altuve hits it from Houston to Galveston, man. It's not like it was close, like LeMahieu's home run. When it came off the bat, it was like, how far is that shit going?
Pitch. Michael Brantley was taken out to add to the defense, so Marisnik on deck, and that 2-0 pitch was a beauty from Chapman.
Okay, now, what's awesome about baseball is listen to the noise when it comes off the bat. That is awesome. Look, I'm not even a Houston fan, man, and that is awesome. You know what? And here's what I love specifically, right? You hear the crack, and then the crowd, like, goes hysterical, right? Listen to it again.
Altuve!
love that shit, man. Pandemonium busting out in whatever the hell the name of that stadium is. And the dude is like, he's 5'6". He's always the smallest guy, and he can crush a baseball.
Jose, how much fun was that for you?
Well, you know, I'm happy, like I said before tonight.
And when you listen to him be interviewed, he is just an absolute gracious, classy baseball player, and he's tough.
Thank God, and I thank everybody in the ballpark because what happened today. We are a team that is working together. We're pulling in the same direction. For me, Julie, three-run homer, creating some momentum, setting the tone. Springer just walking in the last inning, put a lot of pressure on the other team. Michael Bradley made a terrific play that maybe because you never know what will happen. But I'm really happy, and like I said, I thank God for because we're going to the World Series.
Lots of highs and lows in that ninth inning. Describe for your perspective on LeMay, who hits the home run.
Well, you know, I didn't give up because we've been in this situation before. We've been winning. They tie the game. We lose. We come back. This is the thing we are. We are working as a team. And, you know, we really deserve to be in the World Series because all the effort we put this year.
What was your approach against Chapman, and what did it feel like when he hit the ball?
Well, I wanted to be on time for the fastball, but at the same time, I wanted to look just something up in the zone, something I can drive. And like I said, you know, we ended up winning the game, and that's all that matters.
Last one, describe your trip around the bases.
I was just happy, really happy, and just going to the World Series.
That like?
Oh, my God. I can't believe that just happened.
This is the center fielder of Houston. His name is George Springer, good baseball player. And he walks ahead of Altuve to get Altuve to the plate with two outs.
From the low to the high. But all the credit in the world to Altuve, man. That's unbelievable.
All right, describe the LeMahieu home run from your perspective.
I knew he hit.
Springer was playing right field and he misses it by a foot.
Good. I was already playing back, so I knew if it was going to fall short, I was going to be able to get to it, and he hit it just far enough, man. That's unbelievable at bat by him. You know, he's a special player, and that's a special at bat.
Tell me what you saw in Jose's at bat.
Unbelievable. I don't even know how to explain it, describe it. That's one of the biggest swings in our organization's history. That's why he's our captain.
What do you think? You're going back to the World Series.
Oh, unbelievable. You know, that's a hell of a team over there. And you know, it's that was a fight, and a lot of respect for them. That's just crazy.
What was that like when Altuve hits the home run?
It was unbelievable. I couldn't believe it.
This is the shortstop, right? Carlos Correa, pretty good baseball player. He said something interesting about Altuve's at bat, if you're a baseball fan.
Slider 2-1, I mean, the man is unreal.
He said he was hunting a slider 2-1, so the count's 2-1. Normally, you're looking for a fastball, and he said he was sitting on that slider, even if he's not going to say it.
That ninth inning, LeMahieu with the home run. It's a great series, man. We knew they had a great team. Like they call themselves, they're savages, but in this jungle called the American League, we're the apex predators. How does it feel to be back in the World Series? It feels great. It feels great. It's what you work for throughout the whole year. When you show up to spring training, you talk about the World Series, and it's finally here, so it's time to put on some more work.
Carlos, what do you remember about your reaction when Altuve hit the home run?
Wow. I can't remember anything. I blacked out, honestly. I couldn't believe that he sat on the slider 2-1 count and hit it out like that. The man is unreal.
And then this is Justin Verlander, right? Verlander's like 35 and married to Kate Upton, the model, right? So he's doing all right. But you know what? When you these things happen, right? One of the things I love about the playoffs is, you know, you see, you know, the little kid and everybody. Verlander, you're going to hear him say this, but he says, I can't watch it in the dugout. He says, I get too much anxiety, which is hilarious, right? He stands out there on the mound and pitches, but he can't watch it in the dugout with everybody. He said it's too he said it's too crazy for me. It's pretty funny.
Was that inning just?
I mean, incredible. Can't put into words. I mean, seeing the ball come off the bat. I think everybody was out of the dugout. I was kind of like just waiting to make sure it went out, but I mean, can't script it. Just incredible.
LeMahieu's home run. Where were you at that moment?
I was down in the tunnel. I can't watch live, and I get so much anxiety. I thought off the bat we had a chance to catch it, but that guy, I mean, what a series, what an incredible baseball player. I mean, he was a thorn in our side the whole series, but hey, we were able to overcome it.
How does it feel to be back in the World Series?
Incredible. I mean, it hasn't set in yet. I mean, just standing here, you know, I'm trying to take it all in, just trying to see the crowd, feel the atmosphere, just kind of soak in as much as I can.
How about the pitching matchups we're going to see in the World Series?
Incredible. I mean, I keep saying incredible, but it really is. I mean, the Nationals have a great rotation, have a great four starters. I like our rotation as well. I mean, it should be a great series. I'm not going to say incredible again. It's going to be a lot of fun, and it's going to be some really good baseball.
That's awesome. Anyway, that was Justin Verlander. All right, without further ado, good Monday morning to you. Grant Newsham's going to join us here in a little bit, something we taped yesterday, or actually we taped it Saturday. So don't touch that dial. You're going to hear Jack Keane, a little audio from him talking about Syria. So good morning to you. United States Marine Corps Band makes it official. Dedicated to the doctors at Johns Hopkins University, who performed a general transplant about a year and a half ago on a United States Navy corpsman who was serving in the Helmand province of Afghanistan in 2010, and I don't know if it's the same guy, but it might be because that's when this happened. In my experience. And so, so this is dedicated to them.
Our flag comes. You're betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
It defines us. It defines warriors like Gunnery Sergeant John Canley, a leader who led from the front. With his Marines outnumbered, he pushed forward during the Battle of Way City, standing tall during firefights and throwing himself into harm's way to keep his fellow Marines safe.
The only thing I was doing was just responding. The Marines, the young Marines, it shows them that it's not do as I say, it's do as I do. And just being that close with them brings motivation to them.
During firefights, when we'd be all hugging Mother Earth, he'd be standing up directing us. And I think if you talk to every Alpha Company Marine, we're amazed that he was never shot.
For this campus had prepared him well. I'm very confident that, thank you very much. If this was vodka, it'd be a lot better speech. But I'm not supposed to glamorize alcohol anymore. So, young folks, you ignore what I just said.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
If you don't love your Marines, then you really ought to get out. The only reason I stuck around that low paying outfit for 40 years is for the absolute pleasure of serving alongside cocky, rambunctious, disciplined, selfless, unbelievably selfless young Marines. And the infantry got its name, young soldier. And I enjoyed being around them. And in the military, it's all about the team. And so if you don't know the team players beyond simply their rank and last name, you don't care about them deeply. I mean, just go up to Bethesda anytime you want to see the cost of war and see the ranks on the rooms that you're walking into. Lance Corporal here, Lance Corporal there, CFC here, Sergeant there, Lieutenant. If you don't care about these guys, don't expect them to care about what's important to you. They're putting their lives on the line.
I had a Vietnam vet tell me one time, Jeremiah. He goes, PTSD, it's like having a cage in your brain, it's like having a cage full of monkeys. The goal is to keep the monkeys in the cage, because once the bastards make the jailbreak, all hell breaks loose, so you want to keep them in the cage.
Once you're out of the Corps, you know, it's your responsibility to live your life in a way that would honor those that were with you and died. I mean, don't waste your life. Goodness, do something meaningful and don't be going out there saying, look, oh, woe is me, I'm a poor veteran or I'm a disabled veteran. Well, yeah, I am a disabled veteran. But, you know, we can't have that kind of attitude. We've got to show people that, hey, we care about our country. We care about what happens to everyone. Brain Corps changed me. It made me a better man, but I don't know a Marine that wouldn't tell you the same thing, Mike.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day. And Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
All right. We'll win by checking the weather. So Claudian 59 in Quantico. Claudian 64 at Camp Lejeune. 29 Palms. Sunny and 63. Pendleton, sunny and 66. Camp Smith in Hawaii, dark cloudy 74. Okinawa, dark cloudy 75. It's cooled off in Okinawa. In Ramadi, the Al-Anbar province of Iraq, it is cloudy and 78 degrees early in the evening. And in Afghanistan, in the Helmand province, it's even cooler. Cloudy and 70 degrees under early evening skies. Currently at the home of All Marine Radio, 65 degrees under sunny skies. Looking for a high today of 88, 90 tomorrow. What the hell? On Wednesday, 84. Yeah, going to get hot here. Go figure. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll listen to Jack Keane. We'll talk about some history discovered in the Pacific and some other news headlines from Syria as the United States withdraws forces. Who knows, right? We're going to go to Iraq. We're going to retain control of the Syrian oil fields. God only knows what the Twitter account will bring today. So don't touch that dial. We'll talk about that. More of All Marine Radio coming up next right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when the group can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs at allmarineradio.com. And I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Sounds like a pro, Colleen does, doesn't she? Yeah. All right, let's check some news headlines. You'll hear Jack Keane, Peyton Davis. I had another epiphany over the weekend. I don't know if I'll have time to get to it today. All right. So I'm going to go on another one of my post-traumatic winning tours here, starting tomorrow when I do it. And one of the ways I try to find ways to articulate things better, right? How do you get somebody to see that it's traumatic? How do you give value to trauma, right? When it's the only thing anybody sees is negative, right? So how does something, have value? Well, you have to create value, right? The way the system is now, think of it as kind of like the Dow Jones Industrial Average, right? Kind of moving. Right. So your life's moving. Let's just say it's sideways for the sake of discussion, sideways. And then all of a sudden something bad happens in your life. The Dow plunges. And then the Dow's trying to get back up to where it used to be, but now it's got this millstone around its neck. And so you take medications and you go see a therapist. And what you're trying to be is a diminished version of what you used to be. And so the line that, you know, was going kind of sort of sideways up and down, you know, boom, goes down. And then now it's going sideways again, but it's going sideways on a lower plane. That makes sense? If you draw that, I'm drawing it. Hey, I have to tell you that I use engineered graph paper. I'm a fan of it. I love it. So now I'm drawing lines in boxes right now. Right? So then the bad thing happens, and now your existing lower going sideways as well. Post-traumatic winning doesn't play that game, right? The way you give value to trauma is you show somebody and you tell somebody that, hey, there's a place that your life can go to if you choose that. And it's a place that you don't even know exists. But I can take you there if you want to go. And so when you can give trauma, right, that trough in the graph, when you can give that value and say that is a springboard to know where your life used to be, you're going to go past that. You're going to live a better life because of that experience. Now, I know you don't want that experience, and I wish there was something I could do to take it away from your life, but I can't, and you can't. So you have two choices. You can endure it, which is, you know, living on this graph, or you can transcend it. Do you want to come with me? How about that? Good, bad. I'm looking for feedback. Okay? So in this whole thing, and I love when Matt Kiker says, I'm going to teach somebody how to, you know, turn trauma into joy. Well, how do you do that? How do you turn a liability into an asset? Well, you have to assign, you know, this material that, you know, used to be worthless, now is worth something. How do you do that? Well, you find utility and you create demand, right, for that. So you find utility in it. And so, yeah. So I'm curious about, turning trauma into joy, turning it a liability into an asset. And how do you do that? So graphically, you can see how it would be depicted. And then I'm looking for a video, if anybody wants to help me find some. But I'm looking for a video, you know, that horizontal movement post-trauma is a little Cessna flying through the clouds, flying through a storm. And that's what you're trying to do. You're trying to get through life, right? A diminished version, you're struggling, you know, your little Cessna's flying in the storm, right? And then post-traumatic winning gives you a joystick that pulls back and you fly through the clouds and into the sun, right? There's still weather up there, no doubt, but you're in the sunshine. So I'm looking for video that shows that. It could be drone video of flying, you know, in a storm through the clouds in the sunshine. But that's what it would be. And it has to be ascending. Somebody sent me something. What about this? No, it's descending, man. Right? It's got to be ascending. So, anyway. let me give you some shithole weather updates. I wrote a reminder since people forget sometimes. Shithole weather is on the move today. Oscar Mike today. Auburn, Massachusetts. Chris from Webster is in Auburn, Massachusetts at the Auburn Sportsman's Club. Attempting unsuccessfully to catch a trout stocked in a pond. Nice. 46 degrees, expecting a high of 60, partly cloudy, turning to sunny skies. Looks like a good day in Massachusetts. Right? Winds out of the northeast sustained at 7 miles an hour. Chris from Webster, out. Nice. He kills me, man. From Churchbridge, Saskatchewan. Good morning to everybody, right? From Bev. Remember, Churchbridge is 200 miles north of Minot, 15 miles west of the Manitoba border on Yellowhead Highway number 16. How about that? After a week of daytime highs in the 50s, which melted the Saskatchewan snow, it's back to normal temps for mid-October. Thankfully, harvesting has resumed. Yeah, it's a big deal. When the weather impacts the harvest like that, that's no bueno. Currently, Churchbridge, clear skies and 28 degrees Fahrenheit, with winds out of the northwest at 4 miles an hour. In the afternoon, mostly sunny and 43 degrees Fahrenheit, winds out of the north at 8. Minot has clear temperatures, 32 degrees, winds out of the northwest at 11. Afternoon is going to be mostly sunny, high of 48, winds out of the north at 15. Unfortunately, North Dakota received much more snow. I haven't heard that harvesting has resumed there. Yeah, that's a big deal. Howdy, Mac. In Pleasantville, Pennsylvania, the vacation destination for Erie and Pittsburgh, it's currently sunny and 46, hoping to reach 68 degrees, winds out of the southeast at 4 miles an hour, a perfect fall day. So that's going on in western Pennsylvania. Here's the first feedback on the graph video, the graph visual, right? Boom! Exclamation mark. That's good feedback. See? And they speak all Marine radio language. They know. Like, if that's your feedback, boom, then you know that's a good thing, because boom's normally not said when something's going wrong. Because you could articulate this, right? You can try to explain this to people, but, you know, a picture's worth a million words, okay? Here's what I'm trying to articulate to you, right? This is, you know, your life's kind of going on, ups and downs of normal life, bad stock market event. Now, with the help of medication and talking about it, you can get here, but you're going to be a diminished version of yourself. That's what you have to look forward to. Screw that. Grab the joystick, pull it towards you, and we're going up. That's right. So, anyways, how do you depict that? How do you imbue them with a sense of goodness that you feel because you've done it so much, right? And you understand the transformation that can happen in people. How do you articulate that? So, I'm trying to do it better. All right, news headlines. U.S. discussing proposal to leave troops around Syria's oil fields, according to the Pentagon. The Pentagon is discussing keeping a residual force of U.S. troops around oil fields in Syria, Defense Secretary Mark Esper said on Monday as a large U.S. military convoy withdrew from a region of northeastern Syria where Turkey is seeking to establish a buffer zone. Number two, residents of northeast Syria city throw potatoes at departing U.S. troops. That's lovely. Three soldiers die, three hurt in Fort Stewart training accident. Had to do with a Bradley. A West Point cadet is missing with a rifle since Saturday. So, keep you posted on that. And U.S. military presence in northern Australia will grow, former defense officials say, to support U.S. Air Force and Marine activities in the Northern Territory. Australia and the United States will invest about $2 billion in aircraft maintenance, support facilities, fuel storage, and upgrades to accommodation, training areas, and ranges, the Australian Defense Force says. Now, that's the Marine Corps calls that the Rotational Force Darwin, right? And in the pivot towards the Pacific, right, Darwin becomes a big deal. So, interesting. If you're a history person, USNI News has a pretty cool article. Megan Eckstein wrote it, and it's video. Wreck discovered a World War II Japanese carrier key to the Pearl Harbor attack. I think there's a movie coming out about the Battle of Midway, right? How? I mean, did they choreograph this? What the hell? The site was hundreds of miles off the Midway Atoll, about 18,000 feet below the surface. Former director of Maritime Heritage for the National Maritime Sanctuaries Program at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, Jim Delgado told USNI News on Friday. Paul Allen had a plan, and that was to find all these ships, he said. But The find was part of a systemic search effort off the northwestern Hawaiian Islands, according to a story by the Associated Press. Midway is one of the largest sea battles in history because everything fell. That includes ships and aircraft, not only the carriers, but all of those that were shot down. They're all down there, Delgado said. The survey is ultimately going to show us every fallen warrior from the ships and the planes and provide us with a more complete map of this largely untouched and undersea battlefield. The Kaga, K-A-G-A, was originally laid down as a Tosa-class battleship in 1921, but was set to be scrapped after the Washington Naval Treaty limited the number of battleship signatories could own. After an earthquake damaged another ship hull set for conversion to an aircraft carrier, the Japanese Imperial Navy in 1923 decided to convert Kaga to a carrier instead. It joined the fleet in 1929, a renaissance, in Japanese carrier operation tactics in 1932 and 33, led the Navy to put Kaga back into the yard to ditch its three-tiered flight deck in favor of a longer one that could accommodate the bigger and more sophisticated aircraft the Imperial Navy would come to rely on for its campaigns at sea. So there's a whole series of pictures of the Kaga. And, in fact, the Japanese have a helicopter carrier named Kaga today. Didn't know that, did you? Neither did I. The Navy acknowledged in a statement, on the occasion of the discovery of the Kaga, we send our thoughts and prayers to our trusted and valued friends in Japan. The terrible price of war in the Pacific was felt by all of our navies. From that painful lesson, we have become the closest of allies and friends committed to maintaining a free and open Indo-Pacific. Yeah. Hear that, China? The crew aboard the Petrel, P-E-T-R-E-L, which is the ship that is doing the survey of the ocean floor around Midway, right? Have located numerous World War II area wrecks. In the last 2 years, the team has found the wreckage of the USS Lexington, the USS Wasp, the USS Hornet, the cruiser Juno, right? The first three were aircraft carriers. The USS Helena, which is another carrier, and the Japanese ship Hai. So, again, mapping the floor of the ocean. Right? So, if you're a history person, that's pretty cool. There's a story in Marine Corps Times. Marines, your transition time out of the Corps could be longer. Here's why. Let me just tell everybody that's thinking about transition. If you put as much effort into transitioning out as you put to get in, you won't have any problem. Okay? You won't have any problems. It's hard work. It's networking. It's talking to people. And if you'll put in the time, you won't have a problem. If you don't put in the time, you get what you get. Okay, so there you have it. Everybody's warned. Top five stories in early bird. Number one, ISIS will be back. Lawmakers voice Syria fears to Pentagon chiefs. Now, with that said, let me find my Jack Keane audio. So here's Jack Keane talking about Syria last week on Fox.
Let's bring in retired U.S. Army four-star General Jack Keane, who is also a Fox News senior strategic analyst. I know you care a lot about the issue. What is the most important thing people might not be getting correct here?
Well, first of all, the elements of this deal. There is a temporary ceasefire. It only lasts for 5 days. And also, the Syrian Kurds, or the YPG, are only pulling out of the two towns where the fighting is going on. The Syrian Kurds live in an area that runs almost 300 miles long the Turkish-Syrian border. They're not pulling out from all of that in 5 days. That would be impossible. There's been confusion in the media about that.
Jennifer Griffin had some reporting about that, the buffer zone there for the Kurds and where it is. I think that if we could pull that up, there's 120,000 people that are there, and she said there's no way the Kurds can leave that security zone. Thousands of Kurds live in the area, and what the Turks call it, one, is a buffer zone, but it would be hard for all of them to leave. Now, a ceasefire like this, temporary or not, it's never perfect.
Oh, no. Well, ceasefire in Syria are historically never work. Everybody cheats. And what has been going on here from, I think the Kurds have a little bit of a gripe here. Turkey was still conducting air attacks, and they were still using artillery, and they backed off all of that. Some of the administration officials believe what's really happening here is there are some generals that work for Erdogan who don't want this deal to succeed, and that's why they're continuing the fire. Now, Erdogan can police that up. He told the administration he would do it. But listen, so our audience understands the withdrawal the YPG is going to do in the next 5 days is from these two towns, Tal Abyad and Ras Al Ain, where the fighting has been taking place, and they will pull back and go about 30 miles. The breadth and depth of the 300 miles of hundreds of thousands have lived, that's got to be negotiated out for the future.
The president has said that he is unconventional, that it needed an unconventional approach. And what about the point that, you know, that people that voted for President Trump knew that he wanted to get out of the Middle East and that he's making good on his campaign promise? Do you think that's something that he thinks about, as you may have an opportunity to talk to him or know about his thinking, that he's wanting to make good on that promise?
Well, he made a campaign promise, but he took an oath of office to protect and defend the American people after the campaign promise. And every president since Roosevelt has looked at the Middle East as vital national interest of the United States. Why is that? It's because the world economy is dependent on a stable and secure flow of oil out of the Middle East. And we have fought wars over the fact that that's been interfered with in Kuwait when Saddam Hussein took it. So there's always been interest here. The Iranians shoving us around and trying to disrupt the oil. The radical Islamists trying to undermine these countries. Our presence there is so small, Dana. It's about 600 soldiers now.
Mm-hmm.
And that is guaranteeing what? No return of ISIS. And the oil fields in Syria, 70-80% of them are under our control. The Iranians are pause right now to take over those oil fields as soon as we get out. Makes no sense.
And then what do we do? All right, Jack Keane, thank you for being here. I'm wishing your Yankees some good luck.
Oh, we're going to need it.
Way to jinx us, all right? Way to jinx us. The all right, another headline before I get any further in, as long as we're talking about Syria. Is Lindsey Graham, who's been a vocal critic of the president in Syria, was on TV yesterday saying that he believes the Trump policy could succeed. This is from Reuters. In an interview with Fox News, Graham said in a conversation that he had with Trump over the weekend had fueled his optimism that a solution could be reached where the security of the Turks and the Kurds was guaranteed and the fighters from the Islamic State contained. I am increasingly optimistic that we can have some historic solutions in Syria that have eluded us for years if we play our cards right. Let me just tell you, the president doesn't do things right, right? He does them on impulse. And what happened was he made one of his gut decisions. Quick, like he always does. And so then he got huge blowback from it, right? He got huge blowback on it. And then he does what he always does, which is he tries to, you know, Donald Trump is that kid that he thinks if he keeps talking long enough, that eventually you'll nod your head. Okay? That's the kid he is. Right? And so I want to play a little audio from Lindsey Graham. And he was on Fox News Sunday morning. Maria Bartiromo had him on. And here's Senator Graham, who's, you know, been just a huge critic of the president on the issue of Syria.
To see you, your reaction to Secretary of State Mike Pompeo.
One, it's a blessing to have him on the team. He's sort of the anchor tenant. General Milley is doing a great job. Ambassador Jeffries, who has the Syrian portfolio, is the best in the business. And, you know, we've got a really good team. The vice president did a terrific job. So let me tell you where I think we are. Withhold judgment. as to what's going to happen in Syria until it's all in. I am increasingly optimistic that we can have some historic solutions in Syria that have eluded us for years if we play our cards right. I blame Erdogan for the invasion, not Trump. But here's what the president told me over the weekend. Here are our objectives. To make sure we have a demilitarized zone between Turkey and the Kurds. The Kurds were the allies who helped us defeat ISIS. They lost 10,000 soldiers. We've lost 8 in 4 years. God bless the 8. But it was the Kurds who did most of the fighting. Protect our NATO ally Turkey from elements of the Kurds that they considered to be terrorists. A demilitarized zone occupied.
Now here's what I would say to all this. And this is why, in my opinion, you know, the president, you know, to me is increasingly a concern. And that is all these things could have been done before we decided to unass Syria. Right. This was not the plan, because if this was the plan that Lindsey Graham is articulating, they would have rolled this shit out. OK. And this is what you, if you're a conservative and you're watching this shit, this is what's unnerving. If you want to get out of Syria, there's a way that you can do it. There's a way that you can try. Right. And this is all ex post facto. Right. Right. This is all trying to police up your mess.
The international forces, no Americans, but we provide air power. The president appreciates.
Yeah. Who's going to sign up for that? I'll tell you who. African nations or Arab nations that we pay. We'll pay their combat pay. They'll send their guys in there. We'll pay the country some money. Right. And then we'll provide air power. That's who's going to sign up for that. Nobody that you know is going to sign up for it.
Appreciates what the Kurds have done. He wants to make sure ISIS does not come back. I expect we will continue to partner with the Kurds in the eastern Syria to make sure ISIS does not reemerge. That is in our national security interest, and we.
Wait a minute. I thought we were leaving. I thought we were leaving Syria, going to Iraq. That's changed now. We're going to stay and protect the oil wells.
To the Kurds. The big thing for me is the oil fields. President Trump is thinking outside the box. I was so impressed with his thinking about the oil. Not only are we going to deny the oil fields falling into Iranian hands, I believe we're on the verge of a joint venture between us and the Syrian Democratic Forces who helped destroy ISIS and keep them destroyed to modernize the oil fields and make sure they get the revenue, not the Iranians, not Assad, and it can help pay for our...
Geez, what an amazing approach. Why wasn't that all rolled out? Because it wasn't the plan, right? It wasn't the fucking plan.
Small commitment in the future. And protecting Israel is the number one objective. We can do all of that with a very small force.
Senator,
I'm increasingly optimistic this could turn out very well.
It could turn out very well. This is completely different than what you've been saying all week. You have been a staunch criticizer of the president's move to pull all the troops out of Syria.
Maria's pissed, all right? So they've done all their prep, and she's got this whole list of questions about things he said. Roll this quote. Senator, you said that. What do you say now? Right? The whole interview just flipped upside down on her. Watch.
You said, in fact, on this program just 2 weeks ago, if we abandon the Kurds, ISIS is going to come back and that there's an attack on our allies. So you've changed your mind based on what you've heard from the president last night?
Yeah, I still believe that if we abandon the Kurds, nobody helps you in the future. They've lost 10,000 fighters to destroy the caliphate. But there are 15 or 20,000 ISIS fighters roaming around in Syria and Iraq. A small contingent of Americans providing air power and capability will keep ISIS at bay and keep the jails locked up, and the ISIS fighters won't break out. What I heard from the president was a very play the ball as you lie is a concept in golf. Well, after Erdogan's invasion, things have gotten scrambled in Syria. But I see a way forward now that really, quite frankly, is historic. Historic security for Turkey.
Notice how, right, Erdogan, right, it wasn't that we did. Why didn't we tell Erdogan, no, let's cut a deal here, all right? Let's create a buffer zone. Let's move people out, right? let's do a joint United States-Turkish. We're NATO allies, for God's sakes, right? 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 Let's create a buffer zone. Okay? Let's create a buffer zone. Why wasn't that the plan? Because this was never the plan.
Historic security for the Kurds.
Historic. Now, you know. And wasn't the president just bad-mouthing the Kurds a week ago? The Kurds, you know. It's not like they were there at Normandy, you know. You know, look, and as I said last week, the shit show that runs east of the Potomac cannot spread west, okay? It can't spread to the Pentagon. If you want to do those things, if you believe that's in America's interest to get 65 advisors away from the Turkish border, right, and you can't work with your NATO ally there, right, because what the president said was they were coming out, we are coming out, right? Now it's completely different, according to Senator Graham, right? And it's that kind of back and forth, you know, yanking the joystick all over the place. Right? That kind of instability that makes everybody give you space. Yeah, we don't know what they're going to do. Because he does these things out of his gut, and then he reacts to the media. That's not a sign of a leader.
A plan to keep ISIS down and out forever, and a chance to keep the oil fields in the hands of our allies, not our enemies, would be a hell of an outcome. And I think that's now possible.
Let me ask you, Senator, the president says that he wants the troops home. He doesn't want wars. And the American people, much of them, agree with him. Why are we sending troops to Saudi Arabia then?
Well, because Saudi Arabia is an ally and Iran's an enemy, and Iran's the biggest state sponsor of terrorism on the planet. They're trying to build a nuclear weapon. They're liars.
Okay, then it goes to Iran, which I don't have time for. This is a lawmaker's voice fears to Pentagon chiefs. ISIS will be back. House and Senate lawmakers on Thursday left the Pentagon briefing on the crisis in Syria, frustrated with the tangle of problems that came with President Donald Trump's decision to pull troops from Syria and voicing new fears that the Islamic State will regroup to wage terror. All right. Now, Senator Graham, again, now all of a sudden we pulled a rabbit out of a hat. Oh, I just said we were leaving Syria. It was all a trick. Because we want to create a buffer zone. There's going to be a multinational force. We're going to keep Kugel. That's what I meant to say. Come on, man. All that's missing. Oh, where the fuck is it? Where's the Calliope music? Where's the Calliope music? Hold on. Oh, I can't find it. I used to have the Calliope YouTube video. How do you spell Calliope music? Oh, here it is, I think. No, it's this one right here. It has a steamboat in it. Delta Queen. Yeah. Yeah, get a tent and a calliope. Fucking circus, man. That's from the Delta Queen on the banks of the mighty Mississippi, just so you know. Next story. Number two, Syria ceasefire in question after fighting, shelling reported. Remember what I told you? Only dopes believe in ceasefires. Ceasefires allow you to move weapons, move assets, get key people away from places that are jeopardized. Only rubes believe in ceasefires. Number three, another Marine was misidentified in the iconic Iwo Jima flag raising photo. If you didn't listen to the interview about that with Mary Reinwald on Friday, go listen to it. She's fantastic. And she was on a Hewley panel that looked at the flag raising and really the information that had been brought right to the attention of the Marine Corps by amateur historians that had unprecedented access to different images and spent hours poring over them. In a way that the Marine Corps never did. The Marine Corps accepted statements and stories, called it good, but with the, with the coming of age of, digital world, more people can scrutinize things. And then you taking pictures to the FBI forensics laboratory, right, to have them work on them, to tell them, you know, definitively. So it's riveting. And then the story of Corporal Harold Keller, nicknamed Pie for some reason, born in Iowa, raised two daughters and a daughter and two sons, and he never once told them that he was in that picture of that flag raised. Came home, became a telephone lineman, and lived his life. So, anyway. Number four, Trump blasts Mattis as the world's most overrated general, right? Mattis turned that into a bit of comedy last week, which, again, the whole speech that he gave, and that's, you can find that in the videos, in the post for last week on All Marine Radio. Listen to the whole speech. He starts out talking about, he starts out, you know, kind of poking fun at the fact that, you know, he's the world's most overrated general. And then he says, well, you know, and he said that Meryl Streep was, you know, was a horrible actress. And then he says, I guess I'm the Meryl Streep of generals. He said, I'll take that. And pretty funny. But his whole speech, he talks about our political climate and where it's leading the nation and how it has to change, because the cost of what happens because of this media competition we have, right? And the way, you know, politicians run from that is that the cost of that is compromise. That politicians no longer can compromise. And that is not good for the democracy. That is not good. And we have to solve that. So it's, so the speech is, you know, is a great speech. So if you haven't listened to the whole thing, it's about, you know, 17 minutes long. I listen to it. Number five, the Army is do what the Army is doing to fix problems, set up a tenant bill of rights. That's a look at your news. We're going to take a break. When we come back, you're going to hear from Grant Newsham. We're going to talk about things Pacific Rim. I asked him a couple questions. One, based on our discussion with myself, Tim Lynch and Jeff Kenney, what Ken has this funny thing, right? And it's essentially, what's the song that Saudi Arabian military sings? It's song. Answer: Onward Christian Soldiers. Meaning, Saudis don't fight; they hire other people to do it. And he's just saying the same, that, yeah, now we're going to get, what, other nations to come into Syria and get between people? So, anyhow, the first time I read that, I thought that was pretty funny. You know, and I want to say this. How do we make Hillary Clinton just shut the fuck up? Really? Can you imagine accusing another political candidate of treason, which is what she did with Tulsi Gabbard? She essentially accuses her of treason. I mean, talk about just, you know, what General Mattis talked about. That's the political landscape of the United States. You got your money for your book. Go the fuck away already. You and your husband, just go away. Hillary Clinton, in my opinion, is an apologist for a sexual predator who did it his whole life, and she'd go to bat for him, right? You listen to the people that were victims of his, whether it was sexual harassment, and in some cases, women accused him of sexually assaulting them, who went and carried his water in those cases. She did. Right? So she didn't win the election because she didn't win the electoral vote. Yeah, I'm sorry about that, but guess what? It happened. Right? But to accuse somebody of treason, you're not even in the campaign. I just, unbelievable. USMC service records. Mac, I was just re-listening to your interview with Colonel Mary Reinwald to get the details on where to find that investigating EWO book. I want to research the details of my father's 1960 to 64, and father-in-law's 66 to 69 USMC service. Both are deceased now. Do you have any suggestions on where to start? I think that I'm pretty sure there's a form that you can fill out to get somebody's service record. And I don't know what you have to do, but somebody sent to me, because I was looking for my grandfather's military records that were, I think, in that Kansas City warehouse that caught on fire. Remember that? Yeah. So a lot of them got burned. But that was, I think, records before 1940 or something like that. That's a part of the warehouse that burned. I believe if you do a search, you'll be able to find locating service records. And there's forms you fill out, and all that stuff's digitized now. Yeah. Yeah, I think you sent it to the National Archive. Because I had the form, and I filled it out, and did I send it in? I can't remember what I did with it. Yeah, Ohio Man. Let me tell you, Ohio Man sent me a book, and I have yet to crack it. But it's called Operation Buffalo, and we're going to do a little battle studies, a few of them on Operation Buffalo. Yeah, Jack Riley was part of the QRF that went into the DMZ because of Buffalo. And again, I said in the interview with Jack Riley, if you haven't listened to last week was awesome, All Marine Radio, right? Then I know people tell me, Mac, I've never met anybody as much in love with themselves as you are in my life. I'm like, come on, man. It's not arrogance when it's based in performance, okay? Boom. Exactamundo. The interview with Mary Reinwald, awesome, right? The chef and I talk about spicy chicken sandwiches. That's awesome. Mattis's speech is awesome. The interview I did with Jack Riley is beyond awesome. It's awesome on top of awesome on top of awesome. The audio that I played during, I want to say Wednesday's show, talking about preemptive community-based mental health and the data from that, awesome. You should know that. The book, the interview, Depot to Depot, that was great, right? Alex Hollings was on. So, anyway, yeah, there's all kinds of great, 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 great stuff from All Marine Radio last week. So make sure you listen to it. And Ohio Man, I just read great shows last week. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you very much. So anyway, he sent me a book called Operation Buffalo, right? You know, so you look at a book, right? And it's a normal size book, right? Probably, I don't know, 6 inches wide by, I don't know, 10 inches tall, something like that. But the font, man, I opened that thing. I was like, holy shit. The font is like a size 8 font. It's small font. I'm like, you know, this is like a 800 page book if that's a 12 font, right? So it's a lot about Operation Buffalo. But I met a couple corpsmen down at a reunion thing for 1st Battalion 9th Marines, Marines and Sailors, a couple weeks ago. And now Jack Riley will come on. So we're going to learn about Operation Buffalo, the costliest day of Americans fighting in Vietnam, movement to contact, going up into the DMZ. So, again, we're going to talk about that. But Ohio Man sent me that book. He sends me books on occasions. And you know what? I can't always get and read them. I have a stack of about 6 books that I need to read. And that's at the top of them. In fact, I got a new bookmark. Before we go to a break, I'll give you my little how I run my life now. Right? I have a binder. It's a 1-inch binder. It's a heavy duty binder, which means it's put together pretty well. I like it. Right? I have on one side, so if you open it flat, I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I have a thing with 8 dividers in it. Okay. My binder, I have to have everything punched with big holes in it, not those little holes that rip and stuff. They got to be big holes so you can turn the stuff and nothing rips. Okay. I have my calendar on the right hand side, October 21, today. Okay. On the left hand side, I punch holes, not on the side you normally would punch them on, but on the right side for this. So it's my task list faces me. I cut out of one of those moleskin notebooks the little thing that you put in today's current page. I cut that out, and that sits across my page. But I'm going to make a different one. I'm going to make one. I got to find a kind of a real heavy bound or heavy bond paper, right? Kind of cardboardish kind of stuff. Real heavy paper. I like that, by the way. And I'm going to take that and I'm going to cut it so I can slip it in down the spine of the binder. You know, they'll have that clear thing on the back and you can slip it something down there. I'm going to tape a piece of 550 cord, which would be a better version of this. So that way, whenever I'm doing stuff in my binder, I can always go back to my page without searching for it. Okay, so that's kind of the layout. And then on page 2, if you turn the page, I have a piece of engineer paper, right? And so I map the show, right? Right, so Keen Audio, Yankees, Astros Audio, right? Yankee Home Run, Altuve Home Run, Springer Talks, Verlander Talks, Genital Therapy Story, right? The value of trauma, and then I have my graph kind of written out and whatnot. So, yeah, that's how I'm organized here, to go to work every day. So my problem is, like today, I'll work till midnight tonight. Maybe if I could stay up. I woke up at like at 4. I could go back to sleep, so I took a shower and came in here at about 4:45. And so I don't always get a chance to read. Is this a very long-winded way, my organization included, of saying that, and then I've got to do post-traumatic winning. So in the early afternoon, I got to do a little bit of accounting, and then in the early afternoon, I will begin to do post-traumatic winning prep for tomorrow and fired up to go down and do it for one meth information group. So, do it tomorrow morning at Camp Pendleton. At 10 o'clock at the Base Theater. So if you're in the area, stop by. And then tomorrow night, I'm fired up. Somebody you heard here do an interview, and you can find it under, if you Google spouses, right? Oh, my God. I said Google, and my phone lit up. I didn't even say, hey, Google. Get out of my life, you losers. Anyway. If you Google spouse, Google, if you search spouses, plural, you'll come up with a series of interviews. Spouses react to post-traumatic winning, right? And there's an interview with Allison and Berta. Allison's in that interview, okay? She's going to introduce post-traumatic winning tomorrow night. Yeah, I'm fired up. I love when somebody who's seen it and then talks about the impact it's had on them. It's like whenever I can make that happen, that's what I do. So anyway, so my reading, right? That's why I listen to books, because while I sit here and do accounting, like I was listening to Viktor Frankl again last night. I had a friend, listen to this story. I had a friend who I know from Grand Forks, all right? His name's Pierre Lamoureux. Pierre's son, Jacques, introduced post-traumatic winning at the Air Force Academy. When I go back to do it again there next week, he will introduce it again. So, Pierre and I have been great friends for 20 years almost. Yeah, it's hard to believe. But anyway, Pierre called me, and Jacques, before he went in the Air Force, he struggled. You know, with depression and mental health and things like that. And so he listens. He listens to the show. So he calls me because he heard I'm coming up to Minnesota. And, you know, North Dakota's not that far, depending on where you are in Minnesota. So Twin Cities is 5 hours. And then Mankato's another hour south. So it's not as close as one would think. It's a 6-hour drive. So anyway, He said, are you going to come up here? And I said, and he called me. I didn't call him back. And he's like, oh, you're big timing me. I said, yeah, what's up? Feel like you're getting big time by somebody who's not even a big timer. He said, I know. That's the worst. So we're talking. But, you know, what's interesting is that if you met Pierre, you would not think you would like, oh, you know, he's a hot – Pierre's goaltender in hockey. And his two daughters, Monique and Jocelyn, are the ones that have been on the program and are on the women's Olympic hockey team. And you've heard me talk about them on the program. So anyway, he and I were talking about mental health yesterday. And it's amazing, right, the people that listen to the program. And he said, you know, I talk to people about, you know, what you say. I said, no shit. I said, well, look, you know, give him my phone number. Tell him I'd love to help. He said, okay. So it's just the coolest thing. And like I said, it's not hard to do. All you have to do is pay attention. So more Balmarine Radio coming up. Grant Newsham's going to join us. So whatever you do, do not touch that dial. Because it's an interesting conversation. I tee up the questions that we were talking about last week, you know, with Lynch, Kinney. Do you believe that the Marine Corps and the nation, or the nation can afford to be, for the Marine Corps to be all in the Western Pacific? Because we had an interesting conversation with Jeff Kinney and Tim Lynch. And we talked about that. And then we talked about, you know, so if there is a war in the South China Sea, right? I mean, do we need to go in there? And I read him the email that I got from somebody who's of Taiwanese descent who lives in Canada that listens to the program. Yeah, how about that? Balmarine Radio. So you'll hear that. So whatever you do, don't touch that dial. More of Balmarine Radio coming up next right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network. I promise you.
More than 2 million Americans have served in Iraq and Afghanistan, and the Department of Veterans Affairs reports that approximately 11 to 20% of those warriors may have experienced symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder. As we recognize PTSD Awareness Month, Real Warriors Campaign volunteer Meg Mitchum, a former Army combat medic who served in Iraq, encourages fellow warriors to reach out when they need help.
The hardest step was admitting that I needed help coping with PTSD. Once I did, my command and unit fully supported me, and I was able to get the care I needed. Getting support helped me succeed in the military and now in my civilian career.
If you or a loved one is coping with an invisible wound, resources are available and they work. For more information, visit the Real Warriors campaign at realwarriors.net or call 866-966-1020.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends, these are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.